As we recall, at the beginning of the battle, Arjuna wanted to renounce this particular action, which Krishna did not approve. The idea of sannyasa is that we give up actions. That would create a misunderstanding in our minds. Nobody can really renounce actions. Even sannyasins, monks, who take formal monastic vows, also have to do actions. Every type of sadhana is an action. And what is the difference? So instead of doing ordinary type of actions with responsibilities for it, this is like somebody pursuing abstract subjects. And for example, once Einstein was asked, given a choice, what would you like to do? Or how would you lead your life? He said, if I have a small room, a table, a piece of paper and a pencil, I can spend my whole life. The idea is, he is capable of doing that. You know what is the worst punishment in the world? Solitary confinement. Such people are given food, comforts, everything. But they are not allowed to read books, to talk with other people. How would they spend their life? And that would be real hell. So sannyasins do a special type of or intensive type of spiritual practice. According to Shankaracharya, the main duties of a sannyasi are three: Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Constantly studying the scriptures, listening to the highest truth, then go on thinking until all the doubts are removed, certainty is obtained in their mind that this is the truth, and then pursuing that truth until it is actualized, realized. Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, which is obviously an extremely difficult task. You know, there was an opera concert going on, and a fellow came and he said, I am in search of a job. Can you give me a job here? So the director of the opera asked him, what can you do? Can you play the violin or flute or do anything? He said, no, I have no idea. I never touched all these things. I have never even seen in my life. Then what good are you? What can you do? He said, there is one job I can do. You see that fellow standing there, taking a small stick and moving? That I can do. You know, the conductor of the opera, that job he can do. He is only obvious and sitting moving stick. So, it is not possible for ordinary people to live at that stage where they can sit and contemplate. So, Arjuna was not fitted, means we are not fitted. We will go mad without any karma. So they say an idle brain is a devil's workshop. There was this a merchant and a priest were traveling in a train. They got introduced to each other and then they had interesting conversation. During the course of conversation, the priest happened to mention, you know, to think of God even for 5 minutes without thinking anything else is an impossibility. The merchant said, what? I spend whole day thinking about money. I find no problem at all. The priest said, it's not possible. Merchant said, it's quite possible. Shall we have a bet? So this merchant had a beautiful horse. So he said, give me 1 hour time for contemplating on God without thinking any other thought. If I fail, I will give you my beautiful horse to you. Done. So he started thinking intensely about God. He was at the back of his mind, this if I fail, I have to give up my pet horse. Suddenly the thought came, does it include the saddle also? Do I have to give up only the horse, or the saddle also goes along with it? Then he understood the difficulty. So unless we pass through these preliminary disciplines, there is no way to attain to that high state called Naishkarmya Siddhi. In English, it is called that state where a person doesn't do anything. Perfection in inaction. That is called Naishkarmya Siddhi. There is a beautiful book. Its title itself is Naishkarmya Siddhi. A monk who has passed through these preliminaries, he can attain to that state because whatever he may be doing, mind you, not that such people do not do actions, but whatever they be doing, their mind is always united with God. Sri Ramakrishna used to be a beautiful example. That every ship has a compass. Where does the needle point? In whichever direction the ship may be moving, the needle always points to the south. To the north. That example is to give, whatever a person may be doing, it is connected with God. This idea has been expressed so beautifully in a hymn. It is called Shiva Aparadha Kshamapana Stotra. There are also others. It says, O Lord Shiva, whatever I do is your worship. When I am moving my hands, it is like doing arati to you. When my legs are moving, as though I am doing pradakshina to you. Pradakshina means circumambulating you. When I am looking at, my eyes are looking at you, I am having your darshana. When my ears are hearing something, I am only hearing only one word, Shiva, Shiva, Shiva. Even when I am sleeping, that is my samadhi. Yadyat karma karomi tattadakhilam shambho tava aradhanam. Whatever I do, that's my worship of you. Is such a state possible? Ramakrishna, Swami Brahmanandaji used to give an example. It's quite possible. We also attain to that state. Supposing a dog has been beaten on its head, injured. You know, it constantly feels the pain. It eats food, it tries to run here and there. What about us? When you have toothache, what happens? A part of your mind is always fixed on that pain. What about worry? If you are worrying, whatever you may be doing, a part of your mind is fixed on that anxious thought. Is it not true? So if it is possible that a part of our mind can be kept on a particular, one particular subject, why is it not possible to transfer that thought into some other thought? So it is possible. It only needs a change of direction. That is what is called karma yoga. Karma yoga means whatever actions we may be performing, the only thought should be this karma, this action is being done for thy sake, for your sake. That's the idea the Lord wants to teach to Arjuna and through Arjuna to us. But in order to attain to that state, certain preconditions have got to be fulfilled. So here is the verse 3rd, says Gneyaha sanitya sanyasi yo nadvesti nakangshati nirdvandvo hi mahabahu sukham bandha pramuchyate. So Arjuna's question was renunciation of action, O Krishna, and again its performance. You are talking about both, but which is better, one of these? Do thou tell me decisively so that I can follow you. The Lord says in reply, both renunciation and performance of action lead to freedom. Of these, the performance of action is superior to the renunciation of action. Why is it called superior? It is superior because the person has no desires. And a state where there are no desires, that is the highest state. And that person need not perform any action. It doesn't mean that he doesn't perform. It means he doesn't perform. He need not perform. And even if he performs, he doesn't perform. What is this mysterious language? Language is, he performs, but not for his own sake, but for either for the sake of others or for the sake of God, which is the same. This is what Sri Ramakrishna has advocated. Sarva Jiva, looking upon him as Shiva. That is the idea. So, again, who is a sannyasi? Sannyasa means a monk. One who renounced actions. I am emphasizing the word, renunciation doesn't mean a person can sit without doing anything. It means that he doesn't have attachment to the fruits of the action. He doesn't have attachment to the action itself. And he doesn't have attachment, or he doesn't feel, I am the doer. That is the idea. So who is a sannyasi? Usually we say a person who had taken formal vows, monastic vows, and who puts on a particular type of dress, he is a monk. No, he is not a monk. Who is a real monk? That is where the answer is given. Know that person to be an eternal monk. Monk all the time. He who is free from hatred and desire, and he never is overwhelmed by the dualities. Never overwhelmed by the dualities. This world consists of dualities. You know what is duality? Sukha, dukkha, good and evil, life and death. If he is living, he is not bothered. If somebody says, I am going to shoot you, he is not bothered. Why is he not bothered? Who cannot be bothered? Only a person who knows, first of all, there is nothing called death. It is an eternal life. You know, if somebody takes your dress and says, I will shoot your dress, will he be worried? So that is the idea for a person who has that knowledge. This body is just a dress. Not to speak of such a person, we are also prepared to give up this dress. What is cosmetic surgery? Give up the old dress for a new kind of dress. You know, the old nose is substituted by a new nose. But sometimes it doesn't perform any better. Yeah. So the Lord says, he should be known a constant sannyasi who neither likes nor dislikes, for free from the pairs of opposites, O mighty armed, he is easily set free from bondage. So 2 points to be noted here, that he who is free from the pairs of opposites, take the example of pain and pleasure, cold and heat. Is it possible for any embodied being to not to feel cold or heat or pain or pleasure? Is not possible. This world doesn't change even for a monk. But what changes is he experiences but is not affected. He has the same experience. If you prick the body of Sri Ramakrishna or Jesus Christ, it will pain him. As long as he is attached to the body, it will pain him. But he is not affected by it because his attitude is different. So he has the attitude, he knows, I am not the body. Or we also undergo the same type of states of experience depending upon what our goal is. Let me give an example. Supposing you are working in an office and your boss calls you and tells you, climb up this mountain and there is a nice flower there. I want you to bring that flower for my wife. Would you do it joyfully? Right. But supposing you are a lover of mountains, you love to climb the mountains, so you refuse the boss and then go home, take some sandwiches, take up a backpack and happily go mountain climbing. It is exactly the same action. But then in one case, he hates this action. In another case, he loves this. Nothing has changed. Same action he is performing. This is what we are doing day and night. You see, all of you, without exception, from morning till evening, are you not working? Slogging? Going to the office, coming, taking care of the home, taking care of the kids. But would you do it freely for your neighbors? You won't do it. You wouldn't like to do it even for 2 minutes. Why? Because you have no interest in other people. You don't love them. If they are yours, you are prepared to do. But if you think they are not yours, you will never do it. You see what a difference? Same action, but depending upon the attitude. So what is the first point you have to learn? Everybody is subject to these pairs of opposites, dvandva. That is why Sri Ramakrishna used to sing that having been caught in the net of the 5 elements, even Brahman weeps. Rama wept for Sita. But is it the same that you are weeping for your beloved ones? No. His weeping is totally different. Your weeping is totally different. Holy Mother also wept when she saw the pain, the suffering of her devotees, her children. Every mother weeps when she finds her children suffering. Is it the same? Whereas you weep because you are attached. She weeps because she has no attachment. Absolutely no attachment. How much mother loved Radhu? She couldn't be separated from Radhu even for a second. But when the time came, said, take her away. I withdraw my mind from her. Nobody could hold her. Does it mean she stopped loving her? You see the condition. We love somebody because we are attached. She has no attachment but loves. On what level is it possible? Only at the highest spiritual level. This is me seeing the divinity within every body. That is the condition when a man of realization loves everybody. Everybody's happiness is his. Everybody's pain is also his. But he knows that these opposites are a big drama. And yet, he is like a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist has a patient. And the patient says, I am a worm. The psychiatrist both agrees and disagrees. Do you follow what I am talking? The psychiatrist knows this person is not a worm. He is a human being. At the same time, he knows from the patient's point of view, he thinks he is a worm. And so long as he thinks he is a worm, it is absolutely true for him. He is feeling the pain. So he feels the pain of the patient. At the same time, he knows there is really no cause for pain because that person is always a human being. He never has become a worm. So that is the condition of a Jivan Mukta, a man of realization. From one point of view, there are no opposites. There is no suffering. It is eternal bliss. From the another point of view, from our point of view, it is very, very real. So this is the condition which we should try to attain. This is a very difficult state. We have to practice it. So who is a real sannyasi? He who amidst the opposite pairs, he experiences the pains but doesn't react as we react. So what is this mystery? The mystery is, you know, he also, if Sri Ramakrishna, for example, eats a rasagulla, will he feel happiness or not? He feels. If there is headache, will he have headaches? Do you believe he also has headaches? He must have headache. You know why? If there is a head, there will be a headache. If you say he doesn't have headache, then you have to admit that he has no head. But then he knows this is the nature of the head. As long as there is a head, there is a headache. But he says this is nature. This is the nature of the world. It doesn't matter. So that attitude, if we can develop, as long as we live in the samsara, there will be ups, there will be downs. This is the nature of the world. We have to accept it. We do not accept, that is the problem. Or we rather accept one side of the pair. We always want to be happy, free from suffering, everything should be eternal spring. But the problem is, if you are always happy, you will never be happy. Do you understand? It is not possible to be happy unless you experience its opposite. How much would you enjoy your food? For that you have to experience the pain of hunger. How much you can enjoy your sleep? For that you will have to get very tired. Is it not right? So this is the condition. He who doesn't hate, he who doesn't have any attachment for anything. O Arjuna, such a person is easily set free from body. He is called Nitya Sannyasi. What is the point I am making? He experiences. Don't think he is free means he doesn't feel. You have to keep that in mind. O Sri Ramakrishna never felt any pain. This is absolute nonsense. Christ never felt any pain. That is nonsense. He experiences pain even more intensely than us. he also experiences joy much more intensely than us. But then he is not attached to me. We are attached to this pain, wonderful happiness. No. He says, that is also fine, this is also fine. When that comes, welcome. When this comes, it is everything is welcome, because it is a gift from God. So that is the attitude. When a person reaches that attitude, he is a Nitya Sannyasi. Then he can do actions, he can stop doing many actions, only just what is minimum for maintaining the body, because he is capable of dwelling in that highest place. If a person hadn't reached that state, then he will have to go through these experiences of getting attached, detached, then again getting attached, until a time comes when he accepts. So what is the bondage? Constantly we are undergoing the pairs of opposites, just like Sri Ramakrishna or Christ. What is the problem? The problem is our reaction. What is our reaction? If a happy event takes place, we are elated, excited. Our blood pressure rises. If the opposite happens, our blood pressure rises up. Either way, we are affected. Yes, many of us are, we seem to be, become very sweet persons at some point. And the doctor prescribes no more sweets. You are sweet enough. You are a factory producing sweet. So this is the problem we have got. Then he goes on saying that never ever think that one path is superior to the other path. It is a question of which path is most suitable for each one of us. So as I discussed at some length, there seem to be only two important paths, the path of pursuing our actions without attachment and the path of knowledge. That is not opposite to actions. What is meant is, there he confines his actions to the most important things in life. Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. In other words, he is capable of not getting bored. What is our state? If you are left alone for 5 minutes, you get terribly bored. And no object in this world is as boring as God. He doesn't smile. He doesn't see. Whatever you do, whether you are giving arati, you are giving fruits, rasagullas, same. Do you understand? Suppose you invite a friend. He is sitting mum. You offer him cup of tea or bhaji or whatever it is. He eats, but no compliment, no expression at all. How are you? Okay. For everything, how long can you put up with that kind of person? Then imagine what God is. We are getting bored. So to get rid of this boredom, we have to do various things. It is said in the spiritual sadhana practice, the lowest spiritual practice is ritualism. Higher than that is sitting and doing japa. Higher than that is sitting and doing meditation. Higher than that is entering into samadhi. But why are we doing all these rituals, singing, happening things, decorating the Lord and all those things? Do you think you are doing any good to the Lord? There were two Jews, not orange Jews. So one fellow was never bothered about God. He gets up, goes about his business, very intelligent, he was prospering, never entered into a synagogue in his life. It was said of a cardinal, the Roman Catholic Church, he entered into church only twice. First time was when he was baptized. Last time was when his funeral service was. So this Jew never prays to God, never enters into a synagogue, just goes about his business. He was prospering year after year. There was his neighbor who would not take a single step without praying to God. Regularly he goes to synagogue, reads the Torah, all whatever a religious person is supposed to do, very religious, but he never prospered in life. 70 years had passed. He couldn't bear it any longer, seeing his neighbor. So he said, Lord, Lord, at this age, I don't want to be prosperous, because it is useless. But explain to me, I never take a step without remembering you, praying. Whereas my neighbor never thinks of you. Why? So a thundering voice came from up above. That's because Joshua, you are such a bore. you know, we are doing so much good to God. How much he is bored? We do not know. He doesn't tell us. Especially Sri Ramakrishna, you know, he has this knack. He can go at will into samadhi. So the point is, God doesn't need anything. He doesn't want your devotion, he doesn't want your offering. But we need. For whose sake? For our sake. Because this is the only way we can develop our mind, we can make ourselves pure, and we can slowly approach the highest reality. There was a beautiful hymn of Vyasadeva. Is called Para Puja. Therein he says, Lord, pardon me for three mistakes I committed, three sins I have committed. The first is, I went on a pilgrimage to visit you, even though I know you are everywhere. The second is, I always praised you, even though you are beyond all words. The third is, I meditate upon you, even though I know you are everywhere, you are in my heart, and you are only working through me. You are beyond the mind, you can't be thought. So, but I try to think about it. You cannot be expressed, but I try to express. And you are everywhere, but I try to go on a pilgrimage. So for these three crimes, you please pardon me. What a wonderful meaning is there in that. But we have to understand that we haven't yet reached that state. Our attempt is to go to that state. How do we do that? That is why these pairs of opposites are there. To make us saints. To make us saints. Who is a saint? There is no special 700-star hotel in which he lives. He lives exactly under the same circumstances like us, undergoes the same pairs of opposites, but in his mind he lives in that state. How does he do it? By accepting them as inevitable. As long as the body mind are there, it is inevitable. We do not accept. What do we accept? We do accept. What do we accept? Only one thing. If it is happiness, we accept. If it is prosperity, we accept. If it is praise, we accept. If there is no difficulty, we accept. That means, if we accept one thing, means we are attached to it. If we don't accept the other thing, when it comes, we suffer. So we are never calm. We are either excited or we are depressed. That is called bondage. So whatever actions we do, it brings karma phala. This karma phala always follows this law. Either it brings us happiness or it brings us unhappiness. So why does it bind us? Because we are disappointed when the result is not what we expect, and we are excited when the result we expect comes. Either way, we are bound. So this is the biggest problem in our life. Not actions, but our attitudes, our not accepting, or accepting only one side, not the other side. And as long as we go through this state, this bondage would persist. The moment we accept both as equally, neither is good, neither is bad. Because this is the law of life. Winter is winter. Summer is summer. Period. So the Lord is saying, renunciation of action, O mighty arm, is hard to attain without performance of action. The man of meditation, purified by devotion to action, quickly goes to Brahman. Why is he advocating? He is not saying the other state is superior. What he is saying is that that is the goal. The comparison doesn't, if it is equal, then we can compare. Who is superior, man or woman? That is a silly question. Man is man, woman is a woman. Between two men, you can compare. Between two women, you can compare. But between man and woman, it is like saying, you know, which is superior, pant or shirt? So you buy one. Is that the comparison? That's not the comparison. Between two shirts, between two pants, yes, comparison is there. So the Lord is praising Yoga Yukto Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriya Sarvabhutatma Bhutatma Kurvanapi Nalipyate. With the mind purified by devotion to performance of action, and the body conquered, and the senses subdued, one who realizes oneself as the self in all beings, though acting, is not tainted. Though acting is not tainted. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful example. A mother has four children. A child, adolescent, young man, middle-aged person. She cooks in his fish curry. So she doesn't cook exactly and give the same thing to everybody. For the child, she cooks in such a way it is easily digestible. For a little grown-up person, a little more stronger food. This is the example he gave. So what we have to understand, her actions are different. She is giving the richest food to the grown-up person. And you know what you call watery fish. She is giving to the smallest child. Her actions are not equal. But her love is absolutely same. Why is she doing that? She is equally attached to everybody. But she knows which is the best food for each of her children. In fact, it is that love which makes her do these things. This is how God also is acting towards us. This is one of the biggest problems in life, especially for people who are unintelligent, who have attained the state of Trishanku. This is what I call spiritual constipation. Neither believing nor disbelieving, hanging in between. They want to believe. But then they have a big problem. The first problem is, why has God created evil? Why did He create evil? Can God create evil? Evil means suffering. Can God really create evil? Is there something called evil really? Vedanta doesn't believe in evil. It doesn't believe in sin. Swami Vivekananda said, is blasphemous to call a man a sinner. How can a man be a sinner unless there is sin? Concept of sin, evil. No, there is no evil. Then why do we call it evil? What do we mean by evil? When I suffer, that is evil. When if I don't like you and when you suffer. That's the best thing that can happen. You see how much your vested interests are there. So coming back to the point, there are so many people today who turned against religion. They think religion is the cause of so much of suffering in this world. Swami Vivekananda had also pointed out to the Hindus that you are trying to ditch your ancient religion all because you have misunderstood. You attribute every misfortune that happened to India to religion. Religion has nothing to do. In fact, it does only good. But there are problems. What is the problem? The people who profess that they follow a religion, they misunderstand what religion really means and they misuse it deliberately for power mongering, for prosperity and all these things. This is the biggest problem. It is the problem is not in religion. The problem is in the person who is trying to misinterpret and misapply the religious teachings. This is the problem. So this is one problem. So there are some people who do not have problems, who do not have so much of suffering, but when they study history, then read history, they find so many wars, bloodshed has happened. Why does God allow these things? Can he not see? Yes, he sees better than you. In fact, there is this gospel when you read, especially the chapter of Sri Ramakrishna meeting with Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, yes, he was such a learned man, and he says, I don't believe in God. Why? Because if God was there, why did he allow 100,000 prisoners slaughtered by Genghis Khan? Sri Ramakrishna says, how can a puny human intellect understand the workings of the God? It is not possible. Do not think this is theoretical discussion. Every day of our life, we have to face this problem. Why is there suffering? Why is there stress? Why is there so many difficulties, domestic difficulties, office difficulties, economic difficulties, climatic difficulties, besides mental difficulties and all that. So why doesn't God come and answer my prayers? Especially devotees have this problem. I am praying to God. Why is he giving me suffering? That is why he is giving you suffering. If you don't believe in God, there is no problem. Because he can only give problems to those who believe. If you don't believe, how can he give you problems? How do we know that this evil is not like a wonderful medicine for the sickness we suffer in our life? You know, this is what we do. You go as a patient to a doctor, especially the Ayurvedic doctors, call it kashaya, you know, better medicine. Why does he give? Is it to make you suffer? Vedanta doesn't accept the idea of evil. It doesn't accept the idea of suffering is an evil. Suffering is a purification, a rite of purification. If you have done something wrong, the only way you can be purified is through suffering. It is another chance to recover our health and go forward. How many of us are prepared to accept this view? Yet, very few people. So this kind of misunderstandings about God, about suffering, the suffering in this world is not meant to punish us. God cannot punish. He only can do good. Can we understand the suffering we undergo is actually an awakening call? It's something to purify us. You know, our monks are religious people who voluntarily undergo endless suffering. They starve, they fast. You know, many ladies, they fast on festival days and all that. Why do they do that? No, when they do it voluntarily, it is no more suffering. It is suffering from physical point of view, but it is a joy from a spiritual point of view. A student burns the midnight oil. Is it a suffering? Because he is expecting a good result in the future. So every discipline is a wonderful, you know, tapasya, is an austerity for our own good. So every type of suffering that comes is what makes us a saint. This question was asked of Sri Ramakrishna. Why did God create wicked people, evil people? And he said, so that man can become a saint. If there are no difficulties, we are all saints. You know, we are saints. At two times we are all saints. When there is no problem, we are all saints. When we are in deep sleep, we are all saints. Even the most wicked person, he is a great saint. Is that what is meant? When we are faced with problems, sufferings, if we can convert them into a higher state of mind, then only we are really saints. A saint, it is not that a saint doesn't undergo the ordinary circumstances. It is that he is not affected by them. What does it mean? His mind remains steadfast. Samatvam yoga uchyate. There is a word used by the Bhagavad Gita. There are two, three definitions of yoga. If you have studied Gita, three definitions of yoga. One definition is yoga karmasu kaushalam. Skillfulness, dexterity in action is called yoga. What is dexterity? That if you are given a task and you do it very quickly, very intelligently, that is what is normally interpreted as the word meaning of dexterity, skillfulness, intelligent way of acting. No, that is not what? That is not yoga. That is intelligence, ordinary intelligence. That is not yoga. Yoga means, what is the definition of yoga? That which unites us with God, only that is yoga. So what is the samatva here? What is this kaushala? Dexterity means, do any action, but that will bring you to God. That is called kaushala. So you worship somebody, do good to somebody, but if it only brings you to God, that is dexterity. You fight with someone, kill someone, a soldier for example, but if that brings you to God, then that is yoga. This is one definition. Second definition is samatvam yoga vachyate. Under all pairs of opposites, the mind remains ever blissful, ever loving, ever pure, ever positive, ever hopeful, looking upon everything. Premarp as equal. Premarpana samadarshana. We sing every day. Premarpana samadarshana. Sri Ramakrishna. So that is yoga. It is not a state of stone. You know, samatvam is, I am like a stone. If somebody takes a hammer and breaks the stone, it is not affected. If somebody pours nice coconut milk or honey, that person also is not affected. It is a stone. The stone is not affected. No. The person sees only God in every action. That is God. Every action reminds him of God. You praise him, he says, oh, he is praising God. You criticize him, he says, he is not criticizing me, he is criticizing God. This is the attitude of a true saint. So this equanimity, tranquility, profound peace that passeth all understanding, that state of mind is called samatvam. The third definition is, even if there are circumstances, dukkha sanyoga viyogam yoga uchyate. When the greatest suffering comes, the man doesn't suffer. Mind you again, if you are given anesthesia, you will also not suffer. If somebody can cut you to pieces, you will not feel anything. That's not what is meant. The person, if body is cut, he suffers. But his mind is not affected. His mind remains ever in that highest state. Dukkha sanyoga viyogam yoga vachyate. This is what a sannyasi is about. So, how can we attain to that state? Gradually, slowly, we will have to do our actions to the best of our ability. And two conditions are to be fulfilled. One, we do not expect the results, in the sense, whatever results come, we accept them as the grace of God. Secondly, whatever actions we do are only done with one aim: how can I please God? This is called Sharanagati. Anukulasya Sankalpaha Pratikulasya Varjana. According to Ramanuja, do what pleases the Lord. Never do anything that displeases the Lord. In every action, only see, keep God in mind and say, this is what God wants me to do, and for the pleasure of God, I will do it. Brother Lawrence beautifully expresses this idea: I would not pick up a straw but for the pleasure of God. What a beautiful saying, you know. That's why he became, even though he was a kitchen worker, even though he was a lame person, even though he was an illiterate person, he became one of the greatest saints. The practice of the presence of God by Brother Lawrence. This is what the Lord is telling, that a person with the mind purified by devotion to the performance of action, and the body conquered, and the senses subdued, one who realizes one's self as the self in all beings, though acting, is not tainted. He is not tainted. What is taint here? To be affected, to be bound by the results of the action. That is called to be tainted. What happens when we are tainted? Two things happen. One thing is we forget God. Second thing is we suffer. These two things happen. By that we know that we are not practicing karma yoga. So here is the test. Any action that makes you unhappy and that disturbs your equanimity of mind, that makes you forget God, that is bonding. Then you know whatever action you have done, it is not karma yoga. I will give one or two examples to make this point clear. Supposing you are sitting for japa, no? Repetition of the name of God, but you are not happy at all. What has it done to you? Is it a devotional act? Because every devotional act must make you a happier person. Or you are doing puja. Even though you are doing puja, this is a spiritual activity. Worshipping God with all devotion, you are not happy. Let me give a comparative example. Supposing a person, a devotee, is going on performing puja, fasting, doing puja. He is not happy. Another fellow is watching cricket on a TV. He is very happy. Who is nearer to God? If you are not getting happiness from worshipping God, what type of devotion you have? So devotion to cricket is far superior than this kind of worship. Of course, I am only giving an example. It takes time for us to get joy in any spiritual activity. But that is what we should understand. Any action that disturbs our mind, makes us unhappy, makes us forget God, there is something seriously wrong with the performance of that action. It is certainly not karma yoga. So, what was the definition of yoga? That which brings us or unites us with God, that which brings us nearer to God, unites us with God, is called yoga. Now, do not have any misunderstandings about God. What is your concept of God? One concept of God is, He is Sat, existence. What does it mean? It means, if He is eternal existence, then you will have no fear. Suppose somebody comes and says, I will shoot you. If you are afraid, then you don't believe in God. Because how can anybody shoot existence out of, and make it out of non-existence? Is it possible? Second, what is the definition of God? Ananda. If you are thinking of Ananda, but your face is a castor oil face, what does that show? Whom are you thinking? Are you thinking about God or castor oil? Olive oil, okay, olive oil. So this is the, we must have correct idea about God. God is eternal existence. God is eternal bliss. If we are not happy thinking of God, there is certainly something wrong about our concept of God. We think God is like a wish-fulfilling tree. That is what is our idea of God. If I am frightened, He should come and console me. If I am not happy, He should come and make me happy. If I am not getting sleep, He should act as a sleeping tablet. This is our concept of God. And if He doesn't fulfill, then we are profoundly disappointed in it. No, we must have correct idea about God. So that which brings us nearer to God means what? Ramakrishna gives the example. When a man nears the ocean, what happens to him? He hears the sound ocean makes, that noise. The nearer you approach, the breeze, southern breeze is more, and the more of the waves, striking the shore, become more and more louder, is it not? Another example he gives is, the nearer you go to the fire, the more you feel the heat. So you go nearer to God, and if you don't feel fearless, and if you don't feel happy, there is something seriously wrong with your concept of God. In this light, if you understand, any action which doesn't make our mind happy, not in the sense of excitement, but there is happiness and there is happiness. So what is this happiness of God? Let me give you an example. Supposing you have set yourself a task. It could be completing homework. It could be cleaning the house. It could be completing a project, successfully completing a difficult book you have read. There is a sense of fulfillment. That is nearer to the definition of God happiness than, any sense object, eating rasagulla or watching a TV movie or something like that. It brings a great sense of peace, sense of fulfillment. We understand that. Rarely we experience that one. So that is what should happen to us. Any action, if it is done as yoga, then it should bring that state of mind, and we should be able to rise above the difficulties and the stress, etc. Okay. Such a person who is devoted to this karma yoga, a discharge of duties in the sense of yoga, what would be his mental attitude? So beautiful verses. Naiva kinchit karomo itmiti yukto tatmanyeta tatave pashyan shrunvan sprusan jigran ashnan swapan gachan swapan shvasan pralapan visrujan grinnan unmishan nimishan napi Indriyani indriyartheshu vartante iti dharaya. The knower of truth, being centered in the self, should think, I do nothing at all. Though seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, going, sleeping, breathing, speaking, letting go, holding, opening and closing the eyes. Convinced that it is the senses that move among sense objects. Beautiful concept. It means what? Whatever we do 24 hours a day, from birth to death, what is the first idea? I do not do anything. Then who does it? Nature does it. Body does it. Mind does it. I am not doing it. And is it possible for us to have that attitude? Yes, it's possible. Let me give you an example. You know, you are doing something. I see you are doing, you are seeing, you are eating, you are sleeping, you are breathing. Do I feel I am seeing, I am breathing? When you are breathing, do I feel that I am breathing? When you are eating, do I feel I am eating? What an economical idea. If we all have that attitude, one person eating is sufficient for all. No, because I am not thinking I am you. I am thinking you are, I am not you. If a person can think that I am not the body, I am not the mind, then whatever the body mind is doing, this is not me doing. It is the body doing, it is the mind doing. What a wonderful concept. That is the state we should slowly develop. How do we develop this idea? How do we have this kind of attitude? This is called sadhana. Spiritual practice is nothing but to develop this attitude that I do not do anything. It is body, it is mind who is doing. But to get to that state, first of all, I should be separated from identification with body and mind. That is why spiritual sadhana is practice is necessary. How can we do it? There are two ways to do it. One way is the way of devotion. Who is doing everything? God is doing everything. The supreme example of this attitude of mind is Prahlada. Do you know the story of Prahlada? All Hindus must be knowing the story of Prahlada. When his father was torturing him, trying to kill him, you know what he does? Narayana, it is all done by you. He was not defending. When somebody came to chop off his head, he is not resisting, he is not running away, he is not doing anything. Simply he says, O Lord, you do what you want to do. You know, he was never affected. There was no pain, nobody could kill him, his father failed to kill him. Not only that, this boy was in the highest state of ecstasy. Why? Because he identified himself everything with God. It is God who does everything. Indu galadandalevan sandehemola chakri sarvopagatam. Beautiful Potanamathya poem is there. He is not that he is here and he is not there. He is everywhere and he does everything. In the form of a story, this attitude is being inculcated by us. If difficulties come, you don't need to do anything to counter it. If you can say, O Lord, you do what you like, then he will do what is necessary. The second way to do it is the man of knowledge. What does he do? That I am Brahman. I have nothing to do with body and mind. The result is the same. Only thing is the devotee says, O God. The man of knowledge says, O Brahman. This is the only difficulty according to our choice. Like Ford's car. Somebody asked Ford. He was mass producing cars all with black color. So somebody asked him, why not other colors? He said, yes, you can have any color you like, so long as it is black. So either way, the attitude is, I am not doing, somebody else is doing. Call him God, call him Brahma, it doesn't matter. So the knower of truth, whatever the body mind is doing, convinced that it is the senses that move among sense objects, what have I got to do with it? Then the next verse number 10 is, Brahmanyadhaya karmani sangantyakva karotiyaha lipyate nasapapena padmapatram iva ambhasa. He who does actions, forsaking attachment, resigning them to Brahman, is not soiled by evil. like unto a lotus leaf by water. Let us take also the next verse and combine them. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalai indriyairapi yogina karma kurvanti sangantyapva atma shuddhai. Devotees in the path of work perform action only with body, mind, senses and intellect, forsaking attachment for the purification of the heart. Here lies the crux of what the Lord wants to convey to us, the message in this fifth chapter. What is he telling? The first thing he is telling is, do not try to run away from any action, because actions will follow you wherever you go. Because where are the actions? Actions are in your heart. As long as you have a desire, there will be an action. Interesting. Supposing, you know, a person is in the midst of New York City. He is hungry. So what does he do? He is rich also. Imagine he is rich also. What does he do? He chooses the best restaurant that is available and tries to go and order food and eat, right? Suppose this man is in deep forest. That doesn't prevent him from getting hungry. In fact, he will get even more hungry than the person in New York. But what does he do? He will be chasing some wild fruits, roots or whatever he can get. So, why does he do it? Because the hunger is there. So that hunger, where is it? Is it in the forest or is it in the restaurant? Where is it? It is in the mind. So long as we have any desire, even if we go to the forest, there also the same things happen. It was a funny incident, you know. One of our Swamis, who was a very hard worker or a hard working person, so he got disgusted and he said, what is this? I have become a monk. I should be thinking about God, doing tapasya. So he took leave for 6 months, went to Uttarakashi. Uttarakashi means, you know, some people come back. And where from are you coming? I'm coming from UK. Uttarakashi. Returning from UK. So he returned after 6 months and his fellow monks asked him, how did the austerities go? He said, wonderful. What do you mean by wonderful?
These big pumpkins.
Man couldn't understand. What do you mean by this big pumpkin? He said, you know, I never did tapasya in my life. First 2 days passed in enjoying the nature and finding the way about. From third day onwards, I started thinking, what do I do whole day? Collected some pumpkin seeds, planted them, and whole day is there devoted to the pumpkin plants. With his own hands, he was killing the insects. He was watering very nicely, protecting them like protecting a baby. The result is
huge pumpkins.
So the idea is, as long as we have desires, even if we go to the remotest place, we find substitutes to express our desires in the form of actions. This is the simple truth. So, what is the way to become inactive or transcend this? The only way is to get rid of desires. How can we get rid of the desires? There are 2 ways getting rid of the desires. One way is by way of fulfilling them, which is not a good way, because the moment you fulfill, like Ratta Bija, you know, one seed you put in the ground, it grows into huge. How many seeds does it produce? One seed. At the end, how many seeds would it produce? So one desire fulfilled produces 100,000 more desires. This is the moral significance, symbolic significance of Ratta Bija. Yasura, the demon called Ratta Bija. The other way is dedicate all your actions to the Lord. You do something because you want to please the Divine Lord. That way, desires will be fulfilled, but they will never sprout. They will never sprout. That is called devotion to action. Karma Yoga. Shiva Jnana Jiva Shiva. It doesn't bind you. Bind you because, like seeds fried, can never sprout again. Even though the desire is fulfilled, this action doesn't bind, it will only liberate. So the Lord is telling that like a lotus leaf, where does it live? In water. Or sometimes it is in a muddy water. But the mud doesn't touch it. The water also doesn't wet it. Why? It has covered itself with a special oily coating. And the water can never stay there. Even if you put it underneath the water, the moment you lift it up, the water just runs off. That means there would be no attachment. Even if the man is the midst of activities, his mind remains absolutely calm and quiet. He is not excited, he is not depressed, he swims in an ocean of bliss. That is the attitude the Lord says. How can we do that? Brahmani adhaya karmani. Attach every action to glue it. It's super glue. You attach it to God. Brahmani adhaya. This is the meaning of Brahmarpanam. Brahmavi, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam. The person who is offering the oblation itself, the instrument of the oblation and the fire into which he is pouring the oblation, all these activities are done by Brahman himself. Every activity is done by God himself. And God himself says, that is what God does. Ishvaraha sarva bhutana riddeshe arjuna tishtati. There is a puppeteer. And he is making us do all those things. We have nothing to do with that. We are only puppets. But do we realize that we are puppets? No, we don't realize. We think we are moving. Sri Ramakrishna gives the example, you know, when vegetables are being boiled, they will be dancing in the water. Have you seen them coming up and down? And they are thinking, how wonderful it is. We are dancing. Let the fire be taken away. Thanda ho jaye. There will be no movement at all. So the real puppeteer is Jagannataka Sutradhari. There is a beautiful Kannada poem in Kannada that I am not at fault, O Lord. I have not committed any sin. You are Jagannataka Sutradhari. You are pulling the strings. So if I have done something wrong, who has done? So if I am angry, who is angry? He is making me angry. If we have that attitude, then we are not tainted by the results of the actions. The next verse he says, yogi. Here yogi means karma yogi. A bhakta is also karma yogi. So what does he do? He does actions for the purification of the heart. Atma Shuddhaye, for the purification of the soul. Sanskrit language is, we have to understand the meanings of words according to the context. Atma Shuddhi. Atma Shuddhi means for the purification of the Atma. Does the Atma need purification? The Atman is never tainted. It doesn't need any purification. What does the Atman mean here? The heart. The problem is with the mind, with the heart. Our mind should be purified. So whatever actions we do with this attitude, I am doing it for my purification. So if somebody criticizes you, then that action could be supremely purifying to our mind. How is it possible? There was a great soul called Vidyaranya, and he gives this hint, specifically mentioning if someone criticizes you, it can be countered in three ways. Somebody criticized you. The first way is, maybe what he is, the defects he is attributing to me, the weaknesses he is attributing to me, maybe it is true. So if it is true, I should be grateful to him, because instead of going to a psychiatrist and paying, without any payment, he is telling me how to become a better man. What a wonderful thing. And usually, other people criticizing us are right. They are right, because we have a lot of weaknesses. So if there is a weakness, he is pointing out to us, then we should be grateful to him and try to get rid of that defect, correct ourselves. The second method is, supposing we are not at fault, the other person criticizes us, then we should, that is an opportunity for us to develop our saintliness, how much we can remain calm and undisturbed. He is giving us a wonderful, you know, what is called exercise. Is it not marvelous? So that way we develop. The third way of telling is, in this world, Vidyaranya says, to make the other person happy, you have to spend a lot of money and time and energy. Here, without doing anything, you are making the other person happy. What a marvelous thing it is. Yes. So these are the three ways we can counter. So also difficulties, we can counter and say, why did this difficulty come? Do not say, this is meant to make me suffer. See, what is the lesson I have to learn? Suppose the husband is giving you trouble. What is the way to counter this? What is the lesson I have to learn? The best lesson is, I should never have any husband. Because as long as there is a head, there will be headache. Yeah, this is very true. So, this is, any difficulty that comes because there is a lesson for us to learn. Seriously, there is a lesson for us to learn. Whether we know it or not, the good Lord wants us to go to Him. So this is the lesson He is teaching us, that you have to learn something better. If we can have this attitude, and try to pause and say, what does this difficulty is teaching me? What does it teach me? How can I become a better person because of this difficulty? Another thing also you can think, we call on God usually with more intensity when?
In suffering.
Only in suffering. This is the truth. When we are happy, if we can call on God seriously, sincerely, it would be a very nice thing. But that intensity doesn't seem to come when we are really in a comfortable position. So under difficulties, it is a good time for us to turn towards God. And that is why the Lord has created these difficulties, so that we can go to Him quickly. This is the real truth. But once you have reached God, let any number of difficulties come. You know what happens then? The whole show becomes Leela, a beautiful drama unfolding before us. So that is the lesson we have to learn, but we haven't reached that Leela, so don't call this world a Leela. Leela. You know, there was this man, and he had a guru. Guru initiated him, asked him to do japa, and he was having lot of difficulties also outside the world. So he told the disciple, went to Guruji, I have these problems. How can I improve in spiritual life? The guru thought a little and said, look, so everything you should see as Leela. Take a mala, go to Himalayas and think of God. So the disciple went away next day. After 6 months, the guru wanted to see how well he was doing. He went to Himalayas. His disciple was very happy to see his guru, received him nicely, they were talking. And then the disciple said, "Guruji, would you like to have a cup of tea and some bhaji?" He said, "Yes, of course, I will appreciate in this cold Himalaya." So the man shouted, "Hey, Leela and Mala!" Bring tea to our Guruji. Do not think this world is a Leela. We have to develop that attitude. If you believe in God, seriously, if we believe in God, and God knows everything, so whatever He does to a devotee, do you think a mother would ever do harm to her child? Will God bring any difficulty to anybody, and best of all to His devotees? No, He will never do that. But if difficulty comes, that must be a grace of God. It's a very difficult concept for us to take in board. Most of the devotees, their idea is, since I have become a devotee, since I am paying a little bit of insurance premium in the form of, you know, offering some flowers and fruits, so God must be the biggest insurance company. He is not only insurance company like ordinary insurance companies. This is what I call interloka insurance company. Not only in this world, but in the other world also He covers us. Interloka insurance company. That is our concept of God. That's a very childish concept of God. He is there to protect us. If there is any problem is coming, it is not a problem. It is there for uplifting, helping us, making us stronger. Rabindranath Tagore, you know, he said, "Oh Lord, I do not pray to you that you should remove my difficulties. I pray to you make me a stronger person so that I can face the difficulties." At the Ganasena? Yes. Where I can hold my head high and face every problem. This is what every devotee has to pray. "Oh Lord, give me the strength to face this problem." And that He will give if we pray. Somehow the strength comes from within. So connect every activity with God. And this way our heart will be purified. What is the purification of the heart? It is not that the heart will get rid of all problems. What it means, in spite of the problems, it is not affected. It remains ever joyous. This idea Sri Ramakrishna expressed again in a beautiful way when he was suffering, you know, "O mind, and let you take care of the body, let the mind and body take care of each other, let us enjoy the bliss of God." It is possible. Every saint's life clearly demonstrates this fact. They are swimming in an ocean of bliss, not because there are no difficulties, but in spite of the difficulties. Spiritual practice is a very difficult practice. Every step is an austerity. Usually the word austerity reminds us either fasting, going to Himalayas and doing more japa, or sometimes taking bath, a dip in cold waters in winter season. That is one type of austerity, and very easy type of austerity. The real austerity is to live with the people with whom we are living and try to be happy. This is the best tapasya, because wonderful opportunity is there at every step Because everybody, we are all so nicely smiley and all those things. But you know, every person has his or her own ideas about the neighbor. They won't know to really agree with each other. Sometimes they are forced to agree. It is not a wholehearted cooperative agreement, but it is a passive type of agreement. Devotees are also, they become cleverer than intelligent. We must always understand intelligence and cleverness opposite. Cleverness is not intelligence. Cleverness is opposite of intelligence. So the Lord says in the Gita, I accept whatever my devotees offer to me. Patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. Yome bhaktya prayachati. Tadupahrutam ashnami prayatat bhaktya upahrutam ashnami prayatat manaha. Whether it be a leaf, or a flower, or a fruit, or even mere water. So every devotee has tremendous faith in this state. So what do they do? I'm going to the temple. What did he say? Patram. The first thing they seek is, which leaf can I take it and offer to God? If by chance no leaf is available, then they will try to take a flower. After all, it's bhakti that is valuable, not what I offer. And sometimes they pick the flower from the ashrama itself. This happened to me, you know. One devotee came and he was leaving. So we were all there. He wanted to take leave. But he doesn't want to make pranams. You understand, Linda? Pranam, touching the feet. Without offering something. He said, wait, Swami, I'm coming. We were in the main house. He ran to the ladies' guest house. There were some roses growing there. He plucked one and ran back, and I had to wait for 5 minutes for him to come. Offered it with great devotion, bade goodbye and went away. I was thinking, you know, he will go and bring some nice rasagulla or something. So, pushpa. Otherwise, a fruit or a vegetable. Again, from the ashrama grounds or whichever is least. Or if nothing is available, a little bit of water. What does the Lord mean by this verse? He says, if you are poor, if nothing is available, then anything you offer to God is acceptable. But if you are capable of giving, you must give the very best things. You know, this foolish mistake is done not only by ordinary people like us, but even those whom we consider very, very fortunate devotees. There was this incident. Swami Adbhutananda, a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, was residing at Varanasi. There was a devotee very close to him. He came to Varanasi from Calcutta and he had a desire to worship Mother Annapurna. So he brought one sari to be offered. So he told Swami Adbhutanandaji, Maharaj, let us go to the temple. Maharaj agreed. Just on the way, he got doubt about the devotee. He said, let me see that sari. That was a special sari made only to be offered for the puja. It will be only covering this much, like a miniskirt. Ratu Maharaj was very, very displeased and said, what? Would you dare to put this sari to your mother? And if you do not like your mother to wear this sari, how dare you offer it to God? You know, Indian devotees are very clever, Linda. They have special material for puja. A towel to be offered to the priest. And it will be like your wire mesh. Naam kavasti. Then godana. You know, whenever you go to Banaras, you must offer a cow to a priest there. Cows are very costly. But the pujaris have, he knows the devotees. So the pujari also has his own way. He has a cow. So he will sell it to you according to the capacity of your pay, 5 rupees. Okay. With the condition that you donate it back to me. So you get the full benefit of donating a cow for 5 rupees. So one of our swamis wanted to pull this fellow's leg. So he bought the cow for 5 rupees. Taking it away. The priest was running, Swami, Swami, please don't. You know, this kind of cleverness is inhuman and irrational. Would you do that to your beloved children, beloved sister, beloved brother, beloved wife? The best, every human being has some people, beloved people. And they would never dare, never do it. The thought never occurs. We will cheat our dear ones with these kind of things. What is your concept of God? That when you come to the temple, that you should do it? You know, these kind of things should make us think. If you are not in a position to offer, then do not offer. You just offer a good flower. That is enough. God doesn't want anything from you. But if you are in a position to offer, then you offer the very best. This is not only good for devotion, it is also good karma for Hindus believe in the law of karma. If you offer something to God, do you think He will take it? What does He do? He will give it back to us 1,000-fold. So if you give, you know, a wire meshed towel to Him, what do you think you will get? You know, even from purely practical point of view, this is one idea. The other is, you know, Hindus believe in quantity, not in quality. So he wants to spend 1 rupee, $1, and he will buy one bunch of rotten bananas. Who wants to eat this? Will you eat? Will you give to your children them to eat? But he wants the satisfaction of I am carrying a big, you know, plastic bag of fruits, which nobody would eat. So the common sense is just buy one fruit for $1, whatever is available. The best one. He is not bothered about your quantity. He is bothered about what your heart, your love. So these are kind of the cheatings which we should try to be aware. And how can we be aware of these things? Atma Shuddhi. When the heart gets purified, then it sees this kind of problems. This is not a new problem. Nachiketa's father wanted to be clever. What was he offering? Jagdhatrina dugdhadoga pitodaka. They have eaten the last straw of grass. They have drunk the last drop of water. They have also given the last drop of milk. That means they are 1 foot in the grave, what we say. He was trying to give. But then long, you know, devotion for a long time devoted to rituals has slowly purified his heart. Then his own heart acted like a mirror and it showed to him clearly that is this the way to attain to the highest? That's not the way. Nachiketa, Shraddha Avivesha, Shraddha Possessedhi. Nachiketa was not different. The new purified mind is Nachiketa. The old vacillating unpurified heart is Nachiketa's heart. The moment that heart purification came, immediately it acted like a mirror, pointed out his defective behavior and corrected him. This is how symbolically we have to understand that story. Not that the father was a rogue and the son was a saint. It is the person who was slowly progressing towards purification of heart. So that's what happens to us. If we sincerely try to practice spiritual disciplines, then what happens? Our own heart becomes a mirror. That is what Swami Brahmananda used to say, that our own heart, when it is purified, acts like a inner guru, inner guide. It points out, this is what you should not do, this is what you should do. So there comes a time when we don't need any other teacher. Our own heart becomes an excellent teacher. So Sri Ramakrishna, intense yearning, he prayed to Mother, "Oh Mother, I am a fool. I do not understand what is good, what is bad. You make me do, you make me speak, you make me do whatever is good for me." And Mother heard his prayer, and for the first few years, there was no external guru. His own heart acted as a guru. You know, there are several practices he did, like taking a coin and some clay, mati taka, going and cleaning the lavatories of the lavatory cleaners, etc. It is his own heart said, "You go and do this." Wonderful, you know, incidents are there. He said, "One day I saw a young monk resembling exactly like me, coming out of me with a trident, Trishula, and saying to me, 'If your mind thinks of anything else other than the lotus feet of the mother, I will pierce you with this.'" Who was that monk? His own purified heart. So the essence of what the Lord wants to say, he said two things. This is the goal. What is the goal? To live in this samsara as long as body is there, mind is there, like a lotus leaf in water. That is the goal. But to attain to that goal, we must be devoted to our whatever duties, wherever God places us, whatever we are supposed to do, but always with the idea of pleasing Him, and not to be attached to them. Then slowly these actions purify our impurities, means we get rid of the old habits, get new habits, new ways of looking at the world, looking at ourselves and having correct idea about God, and slowly, progressively takes us nearer and nearer and nearer to God. Then it comes a time when our heart never forgets God. That means that person is never forgets who he really is. That is called self-knowledge. I know who I am. I know who God is. I know what the Brahman is, what is the real self. That is the goal. But we have to be intelligent aspirants. This particularly applies to each one of us. You know, we are here. I am talking, you are listening. We are all devotees. The only goal in our life is that we have to reach God. So, God is far away from us. We forget God. We are not happy. We are suffering. That means we are attached. There are desires, that is true, but slowly we will overcome them through spiritual practice. So what is the purpose of every action? To purify our heart. And when? How do we know? Because the more our heart is purified, the more we assess our own situation. We know what are our weaknesses, what are our defects, and what we should do to overcome these defects, weaknesses. That is called purification of the heart. This is what Shankara says, chittasya shuddhaye karma natu vastu upalabdhaye. Chitta shuddhi, all actions are meant for the purification of the heart, not for attaining God. Why? Because God is an object who is already attained. Clean your window. Then the light, you don't need to request the light. Now I have cleaned. Now you please, will you please come? Now there is no need. The moment the window is clean, automatically it will come. This is what Sri Ramakrishna puts in a beautiful way in his own language, that how long should you row the boat? As long as the southern breeze is not blowing. Once you feel the breeze, all that you need to do is unfold your sails. That's all. The boat will be carried by the breeze of God. So the point is, this breeze, southern breeze, is it not blowing now? It is blowing. We do not feel it. Is God's grace waiting there in queue? We are waiting for queue to get a bit of ration of that God's grace. It is right now, right here. But we are not able to feel because we have not opened our windows. And sadhana is meant for opening the windows or for cleaning the windows. If we do it intelligently, nobody need tell us what are our problems, what are our defects. Our own heart will tell us, guide us unerringly to that destination. This is what the Lord is telling here. Atma Shuddhi, all yogis perform their actions to please God, to purify their hearts. Once the heart is purified, then God stands, Self stands revealed. This is the essence of these few verses we have discussed today. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.